This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Welcome aboard with us. It's going to be a great day. And before I forget it, I just got off of the phone with Mr. Dickie Palmer. And the class of 1956, is going to have their 55th class reunion on Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Doubletree. And they are inviting other classes that were around them and to come over and join them for a really great time. And, if I can get loose, I think I'll go there. I have Mr. Jim Averett on there, and his wife was actually in that class.
I understand they're coming from jails and asylums all over the country.
Yes, the class of 56, I think you're exactly right. The class of 59 may be able to go over there and add a little class. What do you think?
I don't know, but the 54 class I was in was voted to most likely end up in prison, I think.
I think half of them did, too, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Want to let you know that part of this show is brought to you by At Home Care. And this is brought to you, and At Home Care was started by Melissa Warren. And she saw a specific need to help the people who were getting older and who were having medical problems, who were seemingly like not able to take care of themselves at home like they used to. And she said that she needed to go in and make sure that those people kept a quality of life and still were able to maintain their homes. And she goes in, and her staff, they provide errands, laundry, personal needs, light housekeeping, transportation to appointments, grocery shopping, meal preparation, medication reminders, and many, many other things. And this is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can reach Melissa at 713-4639 or at www.athomecaretennessee.com. And they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H. And if you're not familiar with Castlewood, it's behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And, Jim, we were going to have Mr. John Blankenship on today, and unfortunately, one of his friends was tragically killed in a boating accident, and he couldn't make it today. We'd like to wish John and all the people in that family as much blessings that can be given to them at this time. And you are always a great guest. You have one of the best sense of humors, and we're talking about Mr. Jim Averett, and of course he was pastor out at Bellwood Baptist for many years, and it's funny how so many people that grew up in the Westview area went into the ministry.
Yeah, there's several of them. Yeah.
Yeah, and would you say that you had a role model that maybe influenced you in those early days?
Well, of course, Brother Medlock was my, so I call him my dad in the ministry because he was there. You know, he came over there in Westview in 1940, and I was 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
But I grew up with him, and of course, to me, Brother Medlock was one of the best pastors I've ever seen.
Well, and one of the best known ever.
I've been in the ministry 50-something years now myself, and but he was, and he never compromised his preaching. He preached the old hellfire brimstone, but he had friends in high places at that time. Frank Clement was a personal friend, and Frank Clement would call him every once in a while and say, I'm meeting some kind of a deal today. I want you to pray for me. evidently, but the preacher may not have got his prayers answered was Frank Clement, you know. But anyway, but Clement, you know, and then people, that I remember one instance where there was an older man that was in prison. Mm-hmm. He'd been there a long time. Mm-hmm. And some of the businessmen, well, Tommy Martin was one, but there's several came, and they wanted to get him out of prison and see if they could get him out. And so they, but they didn't go to the attorneys or anybody or the county executive or anything. They came to Brother Medlock and asked him to go talk to the governor. Mm-hmm. And they got the old man out. He had a terminal illness, and they wanted to get him out where he could die outside. And so that happened. But there's always some kind of a story like that going around. And like I told you before we came on the air, I wanted to tell Greg Tucker that I appreciated the article that he had in the paper the other day on Albert Dubois, yeah. Bantam Dubois. I barely remember that because I wasn't but 11 years old then when he was electrocuted. But I remember and I noticed that Greg pretty well followed the story that Brother Medlock wrote and turned mm-hmm. it into a pamphlet. And a few years ago, we had that reprinted. And I don't know whether there's any more over there at the church or not, but I think they'll dust them off and get them out and make them available to anybody that would like to have one, because one year we gave them out to anybody that would write to the radio program, and we sent out several, and that pamphlet's been around the world.
Now, what does that pamphlet include? I
mean, it's just my experience with a man condemned to die in the electric chair. Mm-hmm, that's the title of it. And Brother Medlock wrote it. Dubois called him and wanted to see him, and he had a series of interviews with him, and then on the day that he was electrocuted, he asked the preacher to come, and Brother Medlock went there and was there mm-hmm. with him. When they electrocuted him. But it's a good story. It's a good, you know, you talk about Bible gospel tracts. That's a great tract. In fact, back then, back in the 40s, after that happened and preacher preached the sermon, it was a sermon he preached, mm-hmm. and then he turned it into a pamphlet. Then he was having tent meetings all over the county and out of the county back then every year. And in every meeting, they wanted him to preach that sermon.
Wow.
And they had a lot of converts. And then, of course, Dubois wrote that statement on the back of that pamphlet mm-hmm. and warning young people, you know. And that was very, very good, very impressive, you know.
And we had a long discussion about Albert Dubois when yeah. Greg was on yesterday. And, you know, there's a lot of conflicts in your thinking when you start talking about Albert Dubois.
Yeah.
Because he was a complicated individual in some respects, but he was a man that let alcohol control his life.
It really did. That's exactly right, and that's a good example of what you know what that stuff will do, and like the story said, like Greg said, you know, when he wasn't drinking in that situation, he was. You know, he was a likable fella. Mm-hmm. But that's the way it is with all of them. I mean, if a guy's not drinking, most of them will be nice, unless they're just hoodlums or gangsters. But most of the guys that are family men or have a family or wife, if they're not drinking, most of them are kind. But they get to drinking, and that throws them into a wild fit, I guess, but
and it gives them a little bit of courage too, to do some things that they normally would not do. It does other things. It distorts their thinking. That's the biggest thing that it does to them.
I can tell you another story about Brother Medlock. He was conducting a meeting out here in the country. I forget where it was, mm-hmm. and Ms. Medlock stayed in the car. That night, mm-hmm. Woody, their boy, mm-hmm. Was just a baby, really, and she stayed in the car to keep Woody, and she was sort of hunkered down in the car, And there's two guys come up by the car and begin to talk, and they were going to catch a ride with Brother Medlock and kill him.
Hmm.
And
never heard that story.
And she heard it. She heard it all, and when the preacher got through and got come back to the car, she told him. And, you know, he picked him up. He picked him up, and then I guess he just scared him to death because he told him what they was going to do. But that actually happened, and he really fought the liquor crowd, you know, and mm-hmm. a lot of times he'd go out and look up in his look under his hood in his car, and make sure somebody hadn't put a bomb in there, because he was always getting threats, you know. Now he was my role model. Now my heroes are my two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Ike and Tom, or Jesse Thomas and George Henry, but
mm-hmm.
I was 13 to 14 years old until I knew that Ike's name was George, because mm-hmm. back then everybody had a nickname.
Yeah, they
over
did.
In Westview, all of them had nicknames, and Tom and Ike was Mike and Ike. Well, Tom dropped his. They didn't call him Mike long, but Ike kept his. And one day there's a fellow asked me uptown, said, how's your brother George doing? I said, I haven't got a brother named George. And so that's when I found out that Ike's name was George.
Now, how much older were they than you?
Well, Ike's 14 years older than me, and Tom was 16.
Wow, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I was the baby of the bunch. I had it made.
They took care of you, did they?
Well, not really. I didn't have a lot of time to spend with him. See, Tom went in the Marine Corps in 1939.
Oh, wow.
He was in the Marine Corps and out on a troop ship somewhere in the Pacific when the war broke out. But and then Ike went on into service shortly after he got out of. Well, he worked about a year after he got out of high school, but he went on to and he could correct me, and he may be listening, Anyway, he joined the Army Air Corps then, and they sent him to flight school. And when he got out of flight school, he ferried a B-17 over to England.
Mm.
But then
they were both right in the middle of it.
Yeah, well, Ike was shot. He was shot down over Germany. He spent about 8 or 9 months in a German prison camp.
My goodness.
And Tom got shot on Peleliu Island in the Pacific. He was a Marine, and he got shot, and that ended his time. And ironically, Tom was in the hospital when Ike came up missing, and they didn't know that they're that close together. When they got out. No, when Ike got liberated and Tom got shot and they sent him home, they didn't know it was that close together.
Now, you've written a number of articles. Did you ever write anything about their experiences in World War II?
No, I never have. I was always hoping that somebody would get with Ike and talk to him about his experiences mm-hmm. in the prison camp.
And the Stalag, yeah.
And for a long time, he wouldn't talk about it much, and Tom wouldn't talk about the Marine Corps, because Tom witnessed a whole lot of atrocities. He was a platoon sergeant, and he witnessed a whole lot of bad stuff over there. See, the Germans didn't torture like the Japs did. The worst thing Ike said was that he liked starved death because the food wasn't any count.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst thing that happened to him was when they bailed out that. If it hadn't been for the German army, that the farmers out there where he landed, where the crew landed, would have killed him. They was really working on him,
really?
And the German army came and captured him, and of course and saved their life. But as far as torture, they didn't face that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can see why they're your heroes.
Oh well, they are, but they're my heroes because. Well, Tom come and got me in 1942, my first day of school at McFadden, and I've always remembered. He came home. I've always thought he, nobody ever told me the difference. I always thought he'd come home especially to take me to school. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he came in, and I never will forget them Marine blues, you know, and that dress uniform.
Oh, man.
And then of course, Ike, he's just been great. And Ike, when he was in prison, when he finally got able to send out those postcard, you know, mm-hmm. they had to print it, and then it had to go through censors. But when he finally was able to get those postcards out of Germany, down at the bottom, when he'd write to Mom and Daddy, but down at the bottom, he'd always draw a smiley face or something like that and say, "Hi, Jim." And he always did that.
Did she get a tear in her eyes when she would be reading those? Because you know she really missed those boys.
Yeah, she
that had to have been really special for her to receive that.
And it was rough the day that they come to tell Mama and Daddy about, well, Mama, Daddy was working. Daddy was superintendent over at the bucket factory. Mm-hmm. But they came to tell Mother about her, about Ike missing in action. And mm-hmm. I was walking home from school, and I saw there was a police car and Brother Medlock's car. Mm-hmm. And I saw him sitting in front of the house, and I thought, something's happened. And so I walked on, of course, went on home and went in, and that's what they were there telling that Ike was missing in action and presumed dead. But anyway, one day we got a letter, one of those postcards. And Tom used to send the victory mail in, you know, where they put it on film, you know. Right. And he used to send his letters, but Ike sent, we got that card and realized that he was alive.
So. You're talking about a blessing.
Oh, man, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, you grew up in what I consider the most colorful area in Rutherford County. There was so much going on over there. Yeah. It was just alive.
Yeah. Well, see, I was in the group. You know, the school kids back then. We collected scrap metal and paper mm-hmm. for the war drive.
Right.
And then they organized it. At McFadden, I don't know how it was at the other school. Well, there wasn't but one other school in the city limits. McFadden and Critchlow.
Critchlow, yeah.
They
yeah.
wasn't anymore, but. We went out and collected magazines and old scrap metal, and they organized it with, they gave you battle ribbons mm-hmm. for so much, mm-hmm. and you started out as a private and you could work your way up all the way up to a captain, lieutenant, and they gave us all these battle ribbons and so we raised a lot of that scrap stuff. But I never will forget, Mr. Hoover lived there on Bridge Avenue, right across the street from us. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hoover, well, his son, I think, invented some kind of a galvanizing procedure.
Uh-huh.
And they had a shop in the back. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Ms. Hoover come over to the house one day, because we didn't have a telephone. And that's another story. But Ms. Hoover came over and said, "Now, if you want to come up and clean out my attic, you can have all the magazines and the newspapers." Well, it's mostly magazines because they saved every magazine.
So you're going to do that for the benefit of the soldiers, and you're going to go up there and clean out her attic.
Yeah, and see,
that's pretty neat.
We'd go up there and take it, and then we take all that to Charlie Clark's uh-huh. and sell it because they bought the scrap stuff.
Now, where was Charlie Clark at that time?
I don't know. I don't remember. I remember where the Jim George junkyard was, but mm-hmm. I don't remember where Charlie was at that time. But but we'd take stuff up. But anyway, I remember just as plain as the day. I sat on the porch at my house. I loved to read, mm-hmm. and so when I got all the magazines, I'd sit over and read them. You know, and I remember reading. The one of the original editions of Life magazine.
Oh my goodness!
And I read that thing and then, of course, throwed it on over on the pile. And if I'd have had that thing now,
there's no telling what
I wouldn't
be
have to worry about Social Security.
No, you wouldn't.
But
Life was the magazine back there in those days.
Yeah, because I remember one time we was in the Smoky Mountains and we was out there and I spotted this bear. And the bear was up on a barrel with his all fours. He just balanced up on that barrel, reaching over in that barrel, foraging for food. And I thought, man, this would make a good, speaking of pictures for Life magazine, if I could get up close enough to kick that bear's rear end and kick him over in that barrel and his feet be hanging up there.
You weren't thinking
well,
that, were you?
Well, I was dreaming. Because when I guess I got within 10 yards of that bear, and that head come up out of that barrel and looked around him at me, and I took off like a shot. But I was privileged to go. They call it the good old days. It wasn't really that, you know. We're living in the best days of our life, but it was the good old days.
It was the good old days.
I remember the rationing and that's because Daddy worked at the bucket factory and they shipped cedar oil and stuff like that. They were allowed to have extra stamps, and so Daddy was able to get an extra set of tires, and he could get an extra pair of shoes. And so, you know, I remember all that rationing business.
You appreciated things back
yes,
then.
Yes, sir. Oh, by all means.
I mean,
yeah.
you had to work for them, and with what little you got, I mean, just anything was a blessing to you back then.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, we were blessed. My daddy didn't lose his job during the Depression. He worked at the bucket factory, and then later on, him and Mr. Patterson, James Patterson, went in together and started buying real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was named for James Patterson.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Mr. Patterson had a white picket fence. He had the picket fence cut out over at the bucket factory, and then they painted it, and they brought it over at 402 Bridge Avenue, which is no longer there. And I thought they'd build a shrine, but they didn't.
It's amazing that they didn't.
They didn't put a memorial up there, but they got an old house there made out of concrete block. But anyway, they come over there and put that fence up to keep me in the yard. I was just a toddler.
Well, let me tell you about somebody who's going to keep us on the air for a little
longer. Let's get some money.
And that's Mark Pirtle and John Howerton. And they own Pirtle and Howerton Automotive, which is at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And they have Fords, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buicks, or GMC. And you can reach them at 1-800-264-6800 or PirtleHowerton.com on the Internet. And just take a nice ride out 231 South. It's a beautiful ride. It's a lovely day today. And just stop by and see them and take a look at some of their inventory that they have. And I'll guarantee you will. It'll be a trip worthwhile for you today.
Play it again, sports!
Your football headquarters.
If you play youth football, we've got the best deals in town. This is Scott with a reminder to all Mustang, Blue Raider, and City League youth football players to come in for the name brand pants, helmets, pads, and more at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Wednesday, and today through Saturday, the Quilts in the Borough display in the gallery at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. That'll be from 10 until 5 each day through Saturday. It's free to see, too. While we're talking about the Center for the Arts, their encore presentation is this Friday and Saturday night. It starts at 6:30 with a dinner at B. McNeil's Restaurant, followed by a concert in the Center for the Arts. The tickets are $60 per person, and this is a fundraiser to pay for the air conditioning unit that went out this year. That's this Friday and Saturday night at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. Call them at 904-ARTS for information. Now tomorrow, from 9 in the morning until 6 in the evening, a community Red Cross blood drive. That'll be at the new Red Cross building at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce location. Apheresis blood donations will be from 9 until 4:45 tomorrow. The regular drive continues until 6 tomorrow night. And tomorrow night at 7, the Democratic Party of Rutherford County has its monthly mixer at Fanatics at the Doubletree Hotel. The 6th annual Warrior Baseball Golf Scramble will be 1 o'clock Friday at Indian Hills. It's $75 per player. Again, the tee-offs at 1 o'clock Friday at Indian Hills. The 60s musical sensation Beehive wraps up Friday and Saturday night at 7:30 at the Art Center of Cannon County. And the 4-H Club Open House and Reunion starts at 4 o'clock this Saturday afternoon at the Lane Agri Park over on John Rice Boulevard, next to Paws. Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
WeatherEye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon. Slight chance of an isolated shower or storm. High in the mid-90s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Chance of showers and storms. Low near 73. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 93.
If you drive a GM vehicle, listen up.
We can do gauge repairs for half the price you're charged at the auto dealer, and it won't take 2 weeks.
This is Amy at Todd's Complete Auto Care Center. We can do it same day.
This is Shelby.
Come see me.
We're on Southeast Broad across from the Discovery Center.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
Today's guest, Mr. Jim Avery.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you? Readyville, readyville, readyville mill, I said get yourself to the readyville mill.
And you're listening to Mr. John Blankenship and friends, Avant Lane, Ken Frizzell, Sarah Frizzell, and Billy Yearwood have a great band, and you can go out there and listen to them every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Have some of the great country western songs, and actually they can sing anything. But just about a 10-15 minute drive down John Bragg Highway, and you'll see the sign that says Readyville Mill, and turn left there, go about 2 more miles, and you'll get to see Mr. Tom Brady, who refurbished the mill, and it's now, next year, it will be 200 years old. So you can go back in time, just relax there on the river, be inside a working mill, and just enjoy yourself. And you will not find a place like this anywhere else. And you can call them if you'd like reservations at 563-6455. Or www.readyvillemill.com. And take my word for it, when you go out there, you'll have the best time that you've had in a long, long time. That's the end of the county that I grew up on.
Yeah, I know.
Jim.
Yeah.
And we had our colorful times, too, just like you guys did. I think it was pretty much that way all the way across the county. But there was so much spirit as far as home spirit in your particular area.
Well, Rockvale, same way.
Yeah, yeah. And we were all very protective of our territory. I guess that's what you might say.
Well, you see, back then, communities were communities. They were
yes, they were.
Communities. You know, over there in Westview, when I grew up, we'd have games up on Power Avenue. And, by the way, my daddy opened Power Avenue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because... When he bought over there, he owned from Bridge Avenue all the way down Battle Avenue to Smith Street and all the way across to nearly to the Franklin Road. Mm-hmm. And I lost my train of thought. What was I talking about? That's when you get old.
Open up the Power Avenue.
But he opened up Power Avenue, and we always. We'd get after him and said, Daddy, why in the world didn't you name it after our family?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of naming it after that power station up there on the on the curb.
Is there anything over there that has the Averitt name in Westview?
I don't think so.
That's almost unbelievable.
I don't think so. You know, on that lot, on the lot where Ike's house, well, you know, you go around the curve, and Daddy had Ike a house built. Mr. Ben Pope built it, but mm-hmm. he had a house built over in that field, and that's where they got the dirt out when they built the viaduct, the old mm-hmm. railroad bridge over there in Westview. But when Daddy owned, when he first bought it, he let a circus come to town, mm. and they had a circus up there on that lot. And Tom Mix was in that circus.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, Tom Mix was in that
circus. The most famous cowboy of those days.
Well, he was, yeah. And he would have stayed that way, but his voice, he couldn't talk. You know, he didn't have a good voice mm-hmm. and gravelly. And so when the talkies come in, Tom Mix rode off into the sunset.
On Tony?
Yeah, him and on Tony. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, but that's what happened with that. But, you know, we're talking about Westview. There are a lot of stores, and if and when I get to write my book, and I'm gonna start doing some research. I got to do some research. I'm gonna take every street, and everybody that lived on that street, that I knew, or you know, that I know anything about, and then I'm gonna tell stories about it. That's what I'm gonna use in my book about Westview.
You need people that grew up there, their yep. parents grew up, grandparents yep. or whatever, yep. to help you research them.
I'm gonna write it from the 20s. I'm gonna include Tom and Ike's time in it,
mm-hmm.
up through the all the late 50s and about 60 when mm-hmm. when the community itself disappeared.
Right.
But I started to tell you, we'd get out there on Power Avenue and play. Play hide and go seek, kick mm-hmm. the can, and all that kind of stuff. Now we didn't kick it on down the road like the government's doing with the debt ceiling, but we'd get out and kick the can. But parents were out there with us, playing.
Mm-hmm.
They was there with us.
Wow. Parents.
Now my mother was crippled; she couldn't go up there. Now she did every once in a while. If I didn't come home like I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
She'd come hobbling up around the corner and get me, but she ordinarily couldn't come. But I had cousins that lived up there, and we'd get out and play. But see, back there, it's community, and families were together.
Well, you didn't have any disruptions. You didn't have television and all those other things.
That's true. We didn't have television.
And it seemed like that families were... They communicated better. They were a whole lot closer back then, because the art of communication was still there in the neighborhood.
Well, I remarked to my wife the other day. There was a lady that lived at the end of our street, passed away last week, and when we come out to come over to I may have been today, but anyway, I said, you know, it used to be that. You remember when if somebody died in the neighborhood or on the street, neighbors would come around
mm-hmm.
collecting for flowers
mm-hmm.
for the funeral.
Right.
But they don't do that anymore. Well, the main thing is that 90% of people don't know who the neighbor is.
Yeah, and that's so
and,
sad.
And they're gone so much. You know, we're in such a fluid society, mm-hmm. and everybody's working. Everybody's had to work. Back then, Mama stayed at home
mm-hmm.
when Tom was born. He was born in 1920.
Mm-hmm.
She was working at the bucket factory as a lot of everybody over in Westview just about either worked at the bucket factory, the Carnation plant, or the silk mill. But she was working there, and when he was born, she quit and stayed at home. She never did work out of the home again.
Hmm.
And,
you know, that's one of the most interesting things, or one of them, is in Westview, is you had your own means taking care of yourself right there in that small community.
Right. Well, see, we had a grocery store. And by the way, anybody listening that's got any pictures of Carlton's Grocery back in the 50s, from 50s on back to the 20s. Well, they wasn't there in the 20s. But anyway, the Carlton's Grocery or Robert's Grocery, which is one in the same building, or mm-hmm. Mr. Northcutt's Grocery across the street. And that's another story to tell about him.
Well, I think we have a caller on the line, Jim. And we're going to have to put our ears on so we can hear him call.
Maybe the police has found me.
Yeah. So, caller, welcome aboard with Mr. Jim Averett.
Hey, Jim, Truman, this is Joe Frank Journey.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe Frank.
I just calling in to tell you, Jim, you know, my granddaddy run two grocery stores over there. And rode up there and went to McFadden.
I did. Oh, yeah, I remember
and,
that.
I remember the city school didn't want to play us because every time they played us, they couldn't beat us, you know, in basketball, football, either one.
Well, you know, McFadden's from about the middle 40s. On for a good while, we dominated elementary school basketball. But there's an interesting thing about that, Joe Frank. I've always believed, now nobody's ever told me different, I always believed that there's several of those guys in 1945 came home from the war and played eighth grade ball. Because they didn't want to go to high school, and back then they didn't have an age limit, and there's one guy, and I'm not going to call his name, but I know he went to the Navy and then come back and played eighth grade basketball.
Well, I'm talking along about
well, you
1950
you weren't even born back then.
No, I'm talking about 1950 on up.
Yeah,
Lonnie Messick and just a oodle of players that come out of there went to all these different high schools. They'd be lined up over at my granddaddy's grocery store picking them guys up, taking them Last Cassis, Rockvale.
Yeah. Well, Bobby Tomlin, you know, Bobby Tomlin played for Central, and his brother Jack played. He made the B team, and I think he dressed out for the varsity, but then he quit school. But we had several. Robert Pittard would have been another Jimmy Montgomery. He could hit the thing from anywhere in the world. But Robert messed himself up, and he didn't go nowhere.
James Dimbold, one of the best players around here in high school.
Yeah.
Went to Rockvale.
Yeah.
Beat Central and beat all of them.
Yeah, we had some good ones. I remember. When was you in school? What in McFadden? What year?
Me, I was in there from 1950 on through to the eighth grade, 1958.
Okay, you came.
And I went to Central 2 years. Then I transferred to Central and I turned to play ball.
Yeah, you came in to high school about the same time I got. You came into school about the same time I got into high school, I guess.
Yeah, but you had some of the best teachers. Would you had Mitchell, Miss Sellers, Red Owens, Mr. Wedley.
Well, I go all the way back to Miss W.B. Carnahan, Miss Neely, the blind teacher, Miss Ellen Brown Mullins. You know, Miss Mullins, she was L.T. Brown's sister. She taught. I learned more scripture in her room. And of course, she's dead now, so they can't come and get her. They say, "Oh, you can't bother her." But I learned more scripture in her class than I did in Sunday school at Westview Baptist Church.
Well, and everybody went to church over then.
Yeah.
I had four sisters and a brother, and they made sure you went to church every time the door was open.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, back then we didn't have it. We had two churches to start with. We had the Westview Church of Christ, and we had the Westview Baptist Church, and then later on, Brother Mofield came to town. We had the Bible, the Church of Jesus, and we did have the Wesley House over by the stockyard over there. But we considered that more or less in town. But that's where I preached my first sermon, is at the Wesley House.
Wow.
But they never did give McFadden no credit back in them days. Now, at least McFadden, one of the best schools is, and it's always been one of the best schools.
Yeah, well,
I just want to call in and holler at y'all a minute. Hey,
Joe, tell Kay congratulations on being named assistant fire chief.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a nice young lady. She is my daughter.
Well,
she's
You remember we used to come over at your place when they were just toddlers.
Well, she worked all the way up for 23 years, I'm proud of her.
She's done real good, but tell her I said congratulations.
Thank you.
Hey, Joe Frank, just want to let you know that when I played at Mitchell Nielsen, McFadden never did beat us.
Well, that wasn't during our time. Beautiful full
was
mind.
That the four, was that the 4 years y'all never showed up?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Joe Frank. You know, Joe Frank does a good job on the county commission.
He is a
hard worker on that.
Yeah, Joe Frank's a wonderful person, really.
A lot of people don't realize how tough a job that is, because if you're in it for the right reasons, which Joe Frank is, and a number of them are, it just tears your gut out, because you're having to make decisions that are some of the toughest that you've ever seen. Yeah. And they don't get the it doesn't seem like that people give them what they really have earned as far as the respect for what they do. We have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard. Mr. Jim Averett.
Jim.
Oh.
This is Earl Roberts. I haven't seen you in so long, and I wanted to call you and ask you how your brother was doing.
Ike's doing fairly well. Like the old saying, he's in pretty good shape for the shape he's in.
Yeah,
but he's got neuropathy and he can't walk good, but he's still able to get out. He comes to church on Sunday morning. Danny, one of the boys, brings him. Danny usually, because he lives around here, but he's still coming to church on Sunday morning. He don't drive anymore, but he's doing pretty good. You ought to run out there and see him.
Yeah, I guess I need to.
Yeah, he'd be glad to see you.
We flew helicopters in the National Guard after
he
got out of World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess I flew with him more than anybody in Murfreesboro, and I really enjoyed it.
Well,
he's such a fine fellow.
Archie Cassidy might run you a close second.
Well, now that may be true.
You know, Archie, Ike's the reason Archie went in and came out a colonel in the Air Force and flew the big planes. Because Ike got him started riding with him in those little old planes out to college when Ike was flying on the G.I. Bill.
Yeah.
And Archie ended
Several
up
people going. Have told me that when he was captured, that the reason he had a hard time, that he didn't put his hands up high enough, and one of the German farmers stuck him in the rear end. Is that true?
Well, I hadn't heard that part, but I do know that he said that the worst trouble he had was... out of the farmers that the German army had to rescue them when they hit the ground, or those farmers would have killed them.
Yeah. Mm. Well, someone told me that he probably could have had a Purple Heart from being stuck in the rear end by a pitchfork. So
well,
I never was sure that was true, but it sure is a good story.
Well, he should have had one, because they did do some damage to him, but I hadn't heard where they did the damage. But he should have had a Purple Heart. In fact, we... there's a man here in town was in the Army, and he's been trying to get these guys that deserved a Purple Heart, but Ike said that he didn't want him to try to get him one, but Ike should have had one. But you know, back then they even froze rank. Ike should have come out of that prison camp as at least a first lieutenant, if not a captain, but they froze rank, and that wasn't
Well, tell
fair.
Him hi for me. And,
I'll do it, Earl.
Thanks for talking
Good
with
talk
me.
Good talk to you.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Earl.
Well, bye-bye.
Earl has got a great radio voice, doesn't he?
Yeah, Earl's all right.
Yeah. I've been talking to him about having him on my radio show. What do you think?
You ought to have him up here. Yeah, he can tell you a lot.
Do you think I'm afraid we're going to have to send somebody out there and drag him up here.
He can tell you a lot of stories about the coal company over in Westview, Roberts Coal Company.
Tell me about Roberts Coal
Well,
Company.
I don't know a whole lot about it, but I just know it belonged to the Roberts family.
Was there any business in Rutherford County, Murfreesboro, that wasn't in Westview at that time?
I was like, you know, Westview, I mean, it would be, today, in today's vernacular, it would be an industrial subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
Because just about all the, any kind of industry was in, of course, Westview... The bound of Westview was at where you turned off of West Main to come up Bridge Avenue.
Right.
Everything down toward the railroad track was determined to be in Westview, as far as we was concerned. We don't know how the city ran. But you had Sally Ann Bakery.
I worked there a little.
Yeah, and you had I went and toured that place one time, and I swore off of bread for 3 months.
Oh, I love the smell of that bread.
Well, I went, but I went through there, and some of those guys was over there. They'd been They'd been stirring. They'd been stirring that batter and stuff, and but then there's a bunch of them at lunchtime. It's true. I toured that spot when I was about the third grade, and they were outside those vets, and they had those dough balls made up, and mm-hmm. they was passing dough balls. And when the bell rung, they pitched the dough balls back over in the vat. And so I swore off of bread for a good while.
You know, you didn't have to bring that up at all.
Well, Sally Ann's been gone now. And
there's no telling how much of that I ate when I was there.
But you had Sally Ann, you had the Rutherford County Creamery, you had J.W. Fletcher Wholesale Grocers, mm-hmm. Of course, the depot down there. You had, of course, later on, you had Benford Motors.
Mm-hmm.
Then go
would you,
across.
Would you say Benford was in there? Yeah, was in Westview?
Yeah. Well, it was right. You know, when you, where you turn to go up the bridge on Bridge Avenue off of West Main, it was straight down the street about just a half, right in the middle of kind of, no, it wasn't in the middle of the block. It was on the left.
So I don't remember
big
them
old
being
brick
there.
Building. Yeah, it was there. But then across the railroad track, you had Consumers Ice Cream Company. And I wish I had the pictures on them mm-hmm. on them lids. They'd be antiques, but now they put movie stars pictures and football players, you know, mm-hmm. at the time. But you had them.
The cheese company.
Then you had the pencil mill. At one time in the '20s, the pencil mill was over there.
I don't remember it.
You wouldn't. I don't even remember it. Mm. But Daddy worked there, and then when they closed the pencil mill, he went to work for Mr. Patterson over at the bucket factory. Mm-hmm. Then you had the pencil mill, you had the bucket factory, you had the silk mill or Buser ribbon mills.
Mm-hmm.
They made parachutes during the war.
Mm.
And
well, let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back at it.
That's all right.
Hi, this is Chuck Lewis with First Bank in Murfreesboro.
And Jim Bryan of First Bank in Smyrna.
Did you know that Social Security and other federal benefits are moving to a paperless system?
If you're currently receiving a paper check from the government and want to know more about how you can make the transition to direct deposit, stop by your local First Bank branch or call 890-1111 in Murfreesboro or 267-1111 in Smyrna.
That's 890-1111 or 267-1111. First Bank, member FDIC.
And today's special at Kirk & Birch is our Chicken Tender Basket. 3 hand-breaded tenders and fries for just $3.99. Need an office party or special event catered? Call us at 893-FOOD. This is Tom, and we also deliver in the Cason Lane area.
Hi, this is Sean Brown at Southeastern Tire, inviting you to come to our annual Labor Day tire blowout sale. All tires sold at cost Friday, September 2nd, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturday, September 3rd, 7 a.m. to noon. Free food, free alignment checks both days, buy now and install later. Buy any 4 Michelin tires and receive a $70 MasterCard rebate.
Hi, this is Joe at Southeastern Tire. We employ ASC certified technicians. We are a full service auto repair facility. We are located between Kmart and Chevy of Murfreesboro.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
I tell you what, I mean, sitting here and talking with Jim is better than watching any show on television or any movie, I guarantee you. And I think, Jim, we need to put you up somewhere. Maybe WGNS can sponsor that.
Other we people
can
have say you that would be put up.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have heard some of them say, now, when you go into the City Cafe, when you go in that door and turn right,
yeah.
And then there's a little corner back on the right, and I have heard some pretty nasty things about you
years. I don't doubt it.
And I have had to take up for you numerous occasions.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I really do. I know you're lying, but I appreciate it.
Who is the hardest one to deal with in Amen Corner? Now, that's one of the more famous places in Murfreesboro. It's just that one little spot where you guys have commandeered.
Probably Mr. Carter, C. Ray. You know,
he's
he's so tight he squeaks when he walks, you know. And he may be listening to me, but.
Well, I thought maybe you might say either J.D. or
J.D.'s not too bad.
Yeah. J.D.'s not opinionated at all, though, is he?
Oh, no, not really.
would you consider J.D. a liberal or a conservative?
He's about as opinionated as a Church of Christ preacher in a debate.
Well, there is one. There is a Church of Christ preacher there at
that
table. Oh,
yeah, Brother Mullins, yeah. Charles Mullins.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You pretty much take in just about all the religions.
Yeah, we've got them. And we used to have, of course, the late Randall Shadowin, you know.
Oh, loved him to death, yes.
We miss Randall.
Yes.
And then Ron Harper used to come up every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen him in a long time.
When do you know that something serious is being said? Because I have never been able to tune in on that.
Well, you know, there's hardly ever anything serious said.
Nobody takes themselves serious.
But you were talking about somebody wanting to put me up. I was just thinking a while ago, I talked to my grandson. He's in nursing school up in Baltimore. He works at Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Wow.
And
congratulations.
He called me, and he said, Granddaddy said, I've started back school for the fall. Said, I've been back 2 weeks. I said, well, have you got any hard subjects this time? And he said, well, no. He said, we're studying mental health this time. And I said, well, if you need a case study, call me. I'll be glad to come up.
You better watch it. There may be a knock on your door. Now, how old is he?
Brian? Oh, good night. He's born in 86, 87. I don't know. He's figured out for
you. He's in his 20s, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's in nursing school. His wife, Brittany, she's getting her PhD. She's a cancer research scientist.
Oh, my goodness.
She's had an internship this summer with one of the biggest companies in the world that produce it. She's working on how to get medicine inside a cancer cell.
You know, there have been so many improvements over cancer research in just the last couple of years. I mean, you're seeing more and more where they're actually attacking the makeup of the cell itself.
That's what she's doing. Both those kids graduated from Blackman High School. Wow. And both of them went to, Brian graduated one year, and then Brittany was right behind him on the next year, and then they went to University of Kentucky and graduated from University of Kentucky. And now they're... Brittany's up there in the University of Maryland in Baltimore. She'll get her PhD in a couple of years. And then Brian, the next year or so, he'll be an RN. And
have they already zeroed in on where they're going to work and which company they're going to work?
No, they don't know because Brittany's making, she's got a 4.0 average and she's, she won this year, up in that internship, she won a contest for some kind of contest they had, and I don't know how many they're working up there, but Brittany can be able to write her own ticket wherever she wants to go. They wanted, they said something here 2 or 3 years ago, they'd like to have her come back to St. Jude, Memphis. She worked the summer in the lab down there. Mm-hmm. But and then Brian, wherever she goes, he'll go, and he wants to be some kind of a biologist. Something. He's not just going to be a floor nurse.
St. Jude is such a wonderful place because you could take the kids who have gotten a bad draw on the straw, they can go there. They'll be taken care of at no expense to the parents. And it's one of those things that they've turned many, many lives around down there. And I can't think of a more wonderful experience than being able to work with kids like that.
I've been fortunate. Brian's going to be a nurse. My oldest boy is a registered nurse. Works. Mm-hmm. He's a urology nurse out at the VA. Mm-hmm. John, my youngest boy, his wife is a nurse, and she taught last year at Motlow. She's teaching nursing. But so if I could just get me a doctor.
You know, you don't need a doctor.
I don't know.
No, you don't. Because for the last 55 years, you have been a minister in Bellwood.
In different places.
In different places.
Yeah.
And You have been a doctor in yourself because you have repaired a lot of lives.
Well, and, I hadn't done it. The Lord's repaired.
Yeah, me. But you're a witness for Him, yeah. and you're out there doing His work. Yeah. And I can't think of any other profession that could be so rewarded in many, many ways.
Yeah, well, it's been good. I hadn't regretted going into the ministry at all.
And you started so early.
Yeah,
over.
Yeah,
in
I pastored the first church I pastored was I was interim pastor at Possum Trot, Patterson Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago. I was 17 years old.
And you've never regretted any of it?
No, sir. No, sir. Never. No regrets.
Well, I just want one thing. I want you to get on that book. Time's passing by both of us. I want you to get on that book, and if anybody out there that has any of the information that he needs about Westview, some of the people that you've had that have lived there.
Or I'd like to know
there.
Some stories. See, yeah. I'm going to put a lot of stories in.
Well, you could have written a book already by what you've told us.
The title of it's going to be a little bit of history and a whole lot of memory.
Can't beat that.
Mm-mm. We want somebody to steal my title.
We will see you guys Friday. We're off tomorrow and Friday, and I have got to answer my phone, so I will see you Friday.